Ladies and gentlemen, sports fans alike, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky's Sports Talk Chicago, one of the couple, two, three best podcasts around. So sit back, grab yourself a cold one and a Polish sausage, park your keister in the French room, and listen to Bill Swirsky's Sports Talk Chicago.
In Chicago, you know that all sports rock. The Bears, Hawks, Bulls, Cubs, and Sox. Pick your favorite, you can choose, as long as the Packers lose. For everything you need to know, it's Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago. Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago. This is your hosts, Alex and Sean. On this episode, we are going to be talking about the absolute thievery, robbery, despicableness that the NFL officiating did on our Chicago Bears. We'll be talking about the end of baseball season and a little continuation of hockey and basketball. But first, I'd like to thank our sponsor, the Rockford IceHogs. If you're not familiar with the Rockford IceHogs, they're the AHL minor league affiliate of the Chicago Blackhawks. What does that mean for you? You could see the stars of tomorrow today at family-friendly, affordable prices. The season is going on right now, so you make sure you head on over to icehogs.com. Get yourself a hat, shirt, jersey, tickets, and more. It is a wonderful gift for the holidays. Spend time with the family, rooting on the IceHogs. Head on over to icehogs.com. Tell them Swirsky Sports sent you. Alex, I know we chatted a little bit. Sorry for my voice. I have been sick as a dog all week long. I'm glad to have my voice mostly back, but we chatted a little bit via Twitter today, that even though the refs absolutely robbed us and our defense couldn't stop anybody, that we were all as content as probably we could expect to be on a Bears loss.
Yep. Considering what the offense did, considering what Justin Fields did, considering the position they're in. Yeah. I mean, this kind of game was kind of expected in terms of the defense. I mean, look, we traded away Robert Quinn. We traded away Roquan Smith. And coming in, you have the Dolphins, who have a number of just really, really good wideouts for Tua. I mean, stopping Tyreek Hill is a tough task for anybody. He is an absolute beast out there. He's the kind of playmaker any team would want. But man, the way the offense played today, Justin Fields breaking the quarterback rushing record in a game, you saw the national media really hype up the Bears offense for the first time probably in any Bears fan's lifetime. The fact that you had experts and ex-players going online and tweeting about what good Justin Fields was doing and how impressed they were with Justin Fields, you know that something is going right. And that's the most important thing right now, is the development of Justin Fields. It's not making a playoff run. It's not necessarily winning games, but getting your offense moving, scoring, and Justin Fields being able to grow and learn in this league, that is priority number one. And it was another day where Justin Fields took some big steps. I think that this is a game we look back at and say, you know what? This was another one of those games. They're saying he's him, and it feels like he really is him. Sean, you and I were skeptical for a little bit. I'm going to admit it. I wasn't sure how this was turning out. It was ugly early on. It was ugly early on in the season. And what we're seeing now is what we'd hoped we would see. These are the types of losses we'd hope we'd have. It is. And I think that we're finally feeling good about where we're going.
Yeah. I mean, the important things on this season are, number one, first and foremost, is the development and growth of Justin Fields. And you're right. Like, I don't know if I ever lost the faith, but with the track record this team has had, it's tough. It's tough to, you know, go against history. But over the last several weeks, you know, is he ultimately where he's going to be? No, but he is making it real difficult for other teams. they other teams know what he's going to do. They put a spy on him. He still beats the spy because he's too fast. And he's so good. And it's going to get to the point where he's got a better offensive line, better weapons around him, and has better command of the offense, and is going to start hitting all of those marks. And you haven't seen the final form of this offense. So we're on track there. The next part would be identifying building blocks for the future. Getting more draft picks and getting the best draft pick that we can in the draft. We're doing most of those things. We've got a lot of young players and players on short-term deals on this team that are being evaluated. We've traded away what we can in order to gain as many draft picks as we can. And the Bears are losing. There's nobody likes losing, but there's good losses and bad losses. And when your team is developing offensively, knowing the defense was a tear down and rebuild as well, you can live with those. So your offense is developing, you're still getting a better draft pick. That's ultimately the probably best case scenario. So the Bears are doing all the things that they need to do during this rebuild. Mm-hmm. And this is absolutely a rebuild. We can't define it as anything else.
Don't let this bad NFC shield anything like making you believe, oh, if you had one win here, one win here, you'd be, listen, you can have 2-3 more wins and be right in a playoff hunt right now. But what good does that do when you know that you're not going to go on a legit playoff run or win a Super Bowl? You know, it's just don't let this league try to overshadow what the Bears are doing. It's not a playoff team. It never was. So as painful as this type of loss today normally would be, I don't find myself saying, oh, if we just won this game, we just won that game, it's good on the Bears that they didn't let that cloud their judgment, that they're sticking to this plan.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the most important thing is this, there's a plan and you have to follow that plan. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. You don't want to sacrifice your long-term goals for short-term gains, you know, and like you said, is sure, if a couple things would have gone a little differently, would the Bears be in a playoff hunt? Yeah. But do you really think that they were going to go to a Super Bowl? No,
of course not.
No. So, I mean, sure, you can look through the schedule. Is that Giants loss, should that have been a win? Probably. That Vikings game, even though the score was pretty close, they dominated you most of the game. The Commanders game should have been a victory. But then again, flip it the other way, that 49ers game probably should have been a loss. The Cowboys game, the Packers game, those were, you just got blown out. And maybe they should have won today.
Had a chance to.
And I mean, the refs just snatched any chance they had out of their hands. But, you know, still, you'll be like, okay, they're in the hunt now. But again, they still have to play the Jets, who just beat the Bills today. Packers again, who I don't care what the Packers have looked like all season. We're going to get last year's Packers. That's who we're getting.
Oh, I know. See, that's what's going to be so frustrating is, you know, he's going to look like prime Aaron Rodgers against us, even though he threw 3 picks today against the Detroit Lions.
Yeah.
That team looks like dog shit, but I'm betting on losing to them.
Oh, absolutely. We still have the Eagles left, the Bills left, the Vikings left. So you know what? There's a lot of room to lose a lot of games in there. So we're as it stands right now, we are. Why is my internet being slow? Tankathon.com.
I believe they said we moved to the 7th with this loss today. At least that's what they said on the radio. That was also before the later afternoon games.
Yeah, according to Tankathon, we would be the 8th pick right now.
Okay, there you go. So, because I think the Rams just lost. So,
whoa. Wait, the Rams came, the Packers or the Bucks came back and won that game?
They did, like last second.
Huh. I was sure that they were going to lose because they just were playing so bad.
If you want to talk about playing bad, I have to mention this. The Bulls just completely fell the hell apart. Oh, anyway,
I turned it on and that's when they fell apart. I feel like I'm the bad juju here. But yeah, I mean, let's take a step back though, is because we haven't had a show since the trade deadline. The big news, we already talked about trading Robert Quinn and, you know, for a 32-year-old pass rusher that wasn't having a particularly great year, getting a 4th-round pick. Okay. It is what it is. I feel like that's probably the best they were going to get. They got it. What other options did they have to trade? Roquan Smith. And I was kind of shocked that they traded him. I figured he would be an off-season trade where they tagged him and then traded him off the tag. But like I said, you had to evaluate where the best time to trade him. Would it be a comp pick? Would it be trading him off a tag or trading him at the deadline? And they got a 2nd and a 5th rounder for him. And I think that's pretty good for a linebacker who, if you want to go by generic, basic ass stats, all right, he's got a lot of tackles. But if you really watch the games and you look at advanced metrics, he's not having a very good season.
No. I mean, it's been very up and down. And here's my whole thing with Roquan is, I think it's easy for us to like look at this situation and say, oh, he wasn't that good anyway. Yeah, blah, blah, blah. Listen, it's okay to admit that for most of his career with the Bears, he's been an excellent off-the-ball linebacker.
Absolutely.
A really damn good one. And look, here's the thing. He set out and wanted a payday. He wanted $20 million AAV. The Bears were not willing to give that. They were not on the same page. And instead of caving or trying to kick the can down the road, they took action. They're like, all right, then we're going to get value for you. And that's what they did. They traded him, and getting a 2nd and a 5th, I think for an off the ball linebacker having an up and down year, I think that's a solid return. You have people like Michael Wilbon screaming, why didn't you get a 1st-round pick for him? You're not going to get a 1st-round pick for a guy like Roquan Smith, who is an off-the-ball linebacker who's not going to record those Khalil Mack-type sack numbers. You're just not going to get that. And look, it's a valuable position. It's not the most valuable position is an off-the-ball linebacker. And look, replacing Roquan is a hell lot easier said than done. It really is. But the Bears have a plan here. They have a vision. And they're not going to really cave to what this vision is. If they didn't think that he was going to fit long term, if they weren't going to find that middle ground where they can agree on a long term, I was hoping they would. I was really hoping he would stay. But this was also in the preseason when he was coming off another Pro Bowl year.
Right. And so,
you know, you're just...
Like I said, is everything I'm saying about Roquan Smith is about what we've seen this season. We have seen some absolutely fantastic football from him in previous seasons. This season, I think he started extraordinarily slow. I think missing training camp and not playing in the preseason really hurt him. And I think he was playing a little bit tentative, probably because he knew he didn't have an extension. I think it took its toll. I think the contract thing took its toll on him mentally. I think there's a lot of factors in it that he just wasn't playing as well as he's capable of playing. Does that now, if the Bears had locked up a deal with him and for a reasonable amount of money, like $17 million, which is still a lot of money, but $15 to $17 million, and he was like, okay, we agreed to a deal, and would I want them to trade him? No. But the fact that he already asked for a trade and he already said no to a contract, you can't go into the offseason not knowing what you're going to get from him, whether he's going to walk or not. And if I'm the Bears, I don't want to use the franchise tag on him unless I have to. And if you can't trade him, you're going to have to use the franchise tag. You can't let him walk away for nothing. And they took what was a very good offer. They probably would not have gotten that offer had they done that in the offseason with the franchise tag.
Right, exactly. And that's where I say you got to take advantage of what you have when you can during the deadline. Teams are willing to overpay more to get what they want now versus the offseason. The offseason, you're drafting and you're signing free agents.
Right. So they got good compensation. And then the surprise pick, which is one that I have tossed around a bit, was what if you go after Chase Claypool or Jerry Jeudy? Do I think either of those wide receivers are elite that are going to be your number one? Probably not. But do they help you right now in a year where you're trying to develop your quarterback? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And they're also young enough where you can extend them and have them be part of your core. And they are also, if you add either one of those guys with Darnell Mooney, and then you add somebody in the draft, like a top flight wide receiver, suddenly you go from worst wide receiver core in the NFL to, God damn, that is an elite wide receiver core.
Yeah, I mean, Chase Claypool, like you said, is he Cooper Kupp? No. Is he Devontae Adams? No. Is he Tyreek Hill? No. But he's a pretty darn solid guy, and that's going to make a difference because that allows you to balance things more with Darnell Mooney. And, you know, we saw in this game today, he's been really good at blocking and making things happen on the field, but Equanimeous St. Brown has been pretty inconsistent with catching the ball, and that final throw that Justin Fields made, a perfect, perfect throw, was just flat out dropped. And we need the guys to catch the ball, and you can rely on Chase Claypool catching the ball.
Yeah.
He's not going to make a crazy play, but he's going to do the fundamental things.
You know, we saw one drop today, and honestly, I think the way it looked to me is I thought that guy was going to intercept the ball, and I think he took his concentration off thinking he was going to have to go to tackling rather than trying to make a play and just mess with his concentration. But other than
that, he was right. He was right in his face. It wasn't like it was nobody was around him.
Yeah. You know, and we would have been singing his praises had the refs made the correct pass interference call, because that would have at worst put the Bears in range to kick a tying field goal or at best score a winning touchdown. But I think we saw good things from him coming over. And I think and a lot of people are upset about Chase Claypool, not because we brought him over, but because we gave up a second rounder. But here's the thing. Other teams were offering a second rounder,
including Green Bay.
And you have, so other teams were valuing that too.
That was the market.
I mean, you're getting a young wide receiver who runs a 4.40, and he's 6'4". Like, and he's 230 pounds. Like, that's a rare size, speed, height combination. And you're getting him for the rest of this season, plus all of next season before you have to pay him. And you're getting him for a second rounder. Okay. What second rounder are you expecting to get for that? So I'm okay with that.
Yeah. I mean, you're trying to help Justin Fields right now. And you know what? If Chase Claypool really ends up being the guy that's going to help him out, that's going to really help him take him to that next step, then you know what? The overpay is worth it. It's only an overpay if it doesn't work.
Right.
And I think it will work.
Yeah. So essentially you flipped a half a season of Roquan Smith for a year and a half of Chase Claypool and a fifth rounder. And, you know, a lot of people were mad about that. Like, whoa, how are you going to have a field of defense without Robert Quinn and without Roquan Smith?
Doesn't matter. Defense doesn't matter at this point in this season.
It especially Mully and Haw were, they were being negative Nancy's about it. But honestly, would Robert Quinn have been any help today?
No.
No. They couldn't. They had no chance of getting to Tua. Would Roquan have helped? No, he would not have. There would have been no difference if either of those two guys were on the field. So I don't understand the point. Is Chase Claypool at least had some impact on the game. So, and he's just going to get more impactful. I think we came out ahead on this.
And look how much happier we are, even despite a loss, seeing the offense do what they did. Look how much happier we were during that game. Everyone was cheering. Everybody was tweeting about how happy they were seeing the offense move. Listen, I made this point on Twitter, and I'm sure you're going to agree with this. I feel better about the Bears after losing a heartbreaker like the one they lost today versus that really ugly win they had against Houston. Yeah, I feel better about the future of this team after this versus that. And that that was a game they won, the Houston game. And we all kind of felt after that. That was kind of when I said, you know what? I'm not going to defend Justin Fields anymore until he shows me. Well, what? Now he's showing me.
You know, the way we have to watch these games is through a much different lens than we're going to watch them next year or the year after that.
Exactly. We're not in a playoff race. We know what we're doing. It would have hurt really badly if they lost today's game, if they were in a playoff, like a legitimate playoff hunt, not a fake in the hunt, a real in the hunt. Would have hurt, but that's not the case.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we are down to bare bones, you know, players. Like we don't have a pass rush. Our interior defensive line needs to be beefed up. We've got has-beens and nobodies at linebacker. And, you know, our defensive backs, I think are okay. It just that you need, without getting any pass rush, they're just getting eaten alive.
Yeah. And I think pass rush is going to be something that Ryan Poles is going to want to address in this draft, because, you know, we know offensive line, wide receiver, we know we are going to take those things in the draft. We know it's important, but yeah, you need to get some pass rush in there. Because it doesn't exist. Especially now with Quinn and Roquan gone. I mean, the pass rush just simply does not exist. And you see the impact it makes. Tua had all day to throw. And when you give him that much time with Tyreek Hill on the field and Waddle on the field, those are going to turn into completions. And they were moving down the field pretty quickly. I do want to say this, though. There was never a point in this game where I was like, wow, defense actually did something really, really good. I will say this, though. I'm just going to say it. And this isn't me undermining the defensive problems. It's been ugly. It's going to be ugly. It's not built to be good. But I will give the Bears defense some credit later in the game. They did make some plays to help keep the Bears in it and give them a chance to win. That pass breakup by Jalen Johnson, yeah, that was underthrown by Tua. But you know what? If Jalen Johnson isn't there to disrupt that pass, the game's over because that's a touchdown. So I'll give him some credit for holding them late in the game to help keep them in it, even though overall the defensive performance, I mean, they got shredded. There's no other way to put it as a whole.
And you know, you look at this team and you look at, so right now that draft pick would be the number 8 overall. So for the most part, you're going to have the pick of the litter almost. As I'm sure you're going to get, maybe you don't. You could jump ahead of Jacksonville and Arizona, but you're probably going to be picking 6, 7, 8 in that range. There's going to be a couple of those picks are going to be quarterbacks. But if you're the Bears, you're going to have the ability to pick most any position you want. You're probably not going to go cornerback because you went high on cornerback the previous year, and you do have Jalen Johnson. We always need more cornerbacks, but that might be an overkill. Probably the likely position. You're not going quarterback, obviously, despite what some ding dongs might say on the internet machine. But the positions that you probably, the only 4 positions I could see them taking: edge rusher, wide receiver,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
left tackle,
mm-hmm.
3 technique.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is going to be another scenario where Ryan Poles is going to draft best available and not reach.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see who's available when. So there's going to be that temptation to look at Ryan Poles during the draft and say, hey, go out and get a wide receiver. But wide receivers might not be projected as high as they draft. And we'll see if they get a high enough draft pick to trade back, because maybe you could give yourself more picks and you could say, okay, towards the end of the first round, mid end of first round, we see the potential of an elite pass rusher and a lineman or a lineman wide receiver. You know, that gives you more options right there. But, you know, they're not going to reach. I know they know what they want and know what they need, but they're also not going to reach either. If it makes sense to draft a position where they're at that they need, they're going to do it. But, you know, let's say you're drafting 8, and I don't really know how the draft class is going to shape up. So this is just, I'm just giving out an example here where you say, oh, draft a wide receiver, no, draft a lineman. It's like, well, maybe the best available player is an edge rusher.
Yeah. Like, you know,
I feel like they'd be tempted to go that route.
I've been starting to scout the draft because, as you know, I love watching the film. I've been starting much earlier this season.
He's already drinking the Kool-Aid.
I've been watching the wide receivers, and I have fallen in love with Jordan Addison of USC.
Which you tweeted at me earlier today.
I did. I'm like, I think the addition of Chase Claypool makes Jordan Addison a perfect complementary piece. He is Darnell Mooney on steroids, not like size wise, but he's a much better Darnell Mooney. He is quick. He is fast. He is super athletic. He is an exceptional route runner. He is, you just can't cover this guy. I see, you know, he is just incredible. And I'm like, you add a guy like him on the Bears, where previously I'd been looking at wide receivers with a little more size because they just were so undersized. I was like, even though if it's something good, you still want somebody with a little size. Adding Chase Claypool negates then that necessary factor. You don't need the height. You have a guy with size and speed, you can go with just best available. And I just salivated thinking about that, you know, wide receiver core of Darnell Mooney, Chase Claypool, and Jordan Addison. I'm like, wow. But I fully acknowledge that until we go through the whole season and the bowl season and the pro days and the combine, like, we have no idea how this is going to shape up. I mean, for all we know, what if in the bowl game Jordan Addison tears his ACL? It's going to drop. What if, you know, a bunch of quarterbacks rise high and that pushes everybody else sort of back? So it's silly to talk now because we don't know where the Bears are picking. We also don't know how that's sort of shaping up, but and it would be awfully hard to get to pass by an elite pass rusher at that position, but man, would it be nice to have a weapon like that?
Yeah, absolutely. You want the type of guys that just can get open against anybody, has elite speed, can break tackles, can maneuver around guys. Could you imagine Justin Fields and Tyreek Hill? Wouldn't that be just so sweet?
Yeah. I mean, Tua throws lame ducks. Like, the thing is, it's like, oh man, Tua is throwing to a wide open guy. Of course, I could be throwing that and have a 70% completion rate. But I mean, look at the throw that could have sealed the game. And he throws that lame duck and Jalen Johnson was able to outrun it and cause a breakup. But like, if he would have put any oomph on that, like, you know, 90% of other starting quarterbacks in the league would have thrown a strike on that.
Yeah. I mean, I think Tua Valala is a very talented guy, but I also think that a lot of it is due to the offense around him. And hey, McDaniels is a very good offensive play caller. Tua's got the weapons, whatever it does to help you win. But, you know, just imagine if Justin Fields is able to get guys like that. I mean, that just makes your job a whole lot easier.
Yeah. And that's what I'm talking about is you add an elite offensive weapon that suddenly you go, all right, now suddenly we've taken our quarterback to the next level. And you take that, Joe Burrow leap.
Exactly. And I think that going forward, we'll be able to watch more games in the future, hopefully, where you're not relying on just scrambling as much. Because listen, watching Justin Fields run is so much freaking fun. Today, breaking the record, what was it, 178 yards? That 61-yard touchdown run was amazing. It was so cool. But, you know, I don't think you want your quarterback over the next several years to have to rush quite like that as many times. I mean, right now, you don't have a whole lot of weapons. Your offensive line is forcing Justin Fields to move around. You're playing to his strengths. You're playing football with him, and that's good. It would just be nice to take some of that pressure off him with having some more weapons. Because, you know, when you run, you risk injury. And that's not me saying in the future I don't ever want him running. That's far from what I'm saying. It's just I still want to see the design runs. I want to see him scramble what he needs to. But, you know, you want to have guys that are able to get open more often and you're able to not have to rely on that quite as much, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, right now they're doing what they need to do and causing mayhem by his ability to run. And I mentioned early on in the season that when he was running so wobbly legged, like he didn't know where he was supposed to go. He was really not confident in his running. And now if you watch him and if you could put side by side his runs early on versus his runs now, he is running with a purpose. He feels confident and he's going to do it, whatever it is that he wants to do. And he's hit 21 miles an hour on his runs. He's been clocked. So, you know, you watch this guy and you're like, okay, he's a different guy. Like literally go back and watch those runs in the first couple of games. And you're going to watch him where he's not sure he's ready to run and he's second guessing himself. And now it's just like, now I'm running. And he just takes off and he's much more decisive and confident and he's getting better results. And I'm here for it. And, you know, like I said, that's not the offense we want to be running forever, but we see flashes of him. All right, I'm throwing a good ball and throwing to open guys. And, you know, the more confident he is, and we've talked about this too, is you getting him in the groove. And most quarterbacks getting him in the groove is throwing some swing passes, some nice, easy passes to get them in the groove. I think Justin Fields, it's establishing that run and moving the ball. Then he's confident. Whatever it takes to get the guy going, he's a young quarterback in a new offense. That's what you do. You, whatever it takes to get him going. And today he had it going.
Yeah, he did. He really did. It's really fun to watch it all unfold. And you think to yourself, every time it happens, every time that there's trouble, you're more and more confident that he's able to get out of that with his legs, those bad situations where he's getting chased. I mean, he's like the most sacked quarterback, and yet he could be sacked, it feels like 10 plus more times if it wasn't for his legs.
Absolutely. And it's hilarious as you had the Bears rushing for over 200 yards again, three consecutive games of over 200 rushing yards, but the vast majority of it is Justin Fields. He had more rushing attempts than any other player on the team. But what's funny is, I don't know if you saw, two data scientist interns for Pro Football Focus did an analysis about Justin Fields and how he's a bad quarterback and he's holding back the Bears. And they released that this morning.
Yeah, I saw that and it was getting dunked on like crazy.
It was really the worst possible timing they could have had for that. It really was. The thing is, do I like statistical analysis and data? Absolutely. But to put it on an island without actually watching film to put it in context is kind of dumb. If the eyeball test says, that doesn't make sense, you know? I was trying to explain it to my wife. I was like, if you gave somebody like a puzzle of a human skeleton and they'd never seen a human before, and they're like, you know what? We worked on this and we tried to figure out all the functions, what these things could do. And we had these things and they had the feet on the head. You're like, excuse me. And you're like, okay, well, here's the actual picture of a human. The feet are on the bottom. They walk on those. They're not on their head. Oh, okay. And, you know, to the person looking at it, probably made a whole lot of sense until they actually saw a picture of it and then put it in context. And that's kind of what happens. Like, if you're not watching Justin Fields' film game in and game out, and you're trying to apply some numbers to it, all right, probably doesn't look that great. But this team without him would be real bad.
Oh, could you imagine if, like, Andy Dalton was the quarterback, the current form Andy Dalton was the quarterback on this team?
Today would have been probably a 55-7 game.
Probably.
Because part of the best offense the best defense the Bears had today was keeping the ball out of the hands of the Dolphins offense. The long drives early on, the Dolphins only had the ball offensively once in the first quarter.
Yeah, I mean, the Bears were putting together some nice lengthy drives, which they were able to mix in a lot of things. They did a lot of wide receiver screens, maybe a few too many. They were able to run with Justin Fields. They made plays in order to keep the ball moving, and you know, they ate up some clock. So it didn't really matter in terms of the defense resting them. I mean, let's be real, but when you face an opponent like you are, part of winning shootouts is having drives, keeping the ball out of the other team's hands.
I mean, the Bears had the time of possession 10 minutes longer than the Dolphins. That's pretty significant.
Mm-hmm.
So, that was huge, being able to do sustained drives that took a lot of time off. And it was nice that they were able to mostly score touchdowns. But there was a lot of points where this game could have got ugly, and it didn't.
I mean, yeah, they kept the pedal to the metal all the way to the end. They didn't let themselves, the most they were down was after a special teams misplay.
Yeah. I mean, the big turning points were, the points that really did hurt the Bears were having to kick a field goal on that first drive instead of going for a touchdown. That ultimately cost them of some. The block punt was huge. If the Bears would have got the punt off, would they have stopped them? No, but they would have eaten more time off the clock. Would have taken them a little longer to score. But ultimately, I hate putting refs in to blame, but did the refs ever have a complete consecutive series of bad calls at the end of the game?
Well, you know, you had the missed DPI, and don't forget that bullcrap pass interference against Eddie Jackson.
Let's go before that. There was the play where Tua was not called for intentional grounding.
That too.
And on that too. Same play, go back and watch that, is the, Armon Watts or Mike Pennell, whoever that was, the defensive lineman. Watch, the offensive lineman is behind him, yanking on the back of his shirt, and like he's pulling a sled, and they didn't call holding.
Yep.
Like, how do you not, how is that not called holding? Even if you don't call the intentional grounding, which it was intentional grounding, either one of those backs up the Dolphins. Then you had the BS defensive pass interference. And I don't know if you saw Eddie Jackson's talking about it after the game.
I did not.
He said when the play was happening, he said, he's like, I never looked at the receiver. I followed the ball the whole way. He's like, I tracked it. And when I went up to go get the ball, I felt somebody hit me in the back. And so when I saw a flag, I was sure it was offensive pass interference because I was tracking the ball and somebody hit me in the back. And he's like, when they called it defensive, I ran to the ref and I said, how is that pass interference? And the ref told him, you never looked back at the ball. And he's like, look up at the replay on the screen. Look at the replay on the screen. And it's, if the ref said he never turned around to look at the ball, then that ref clearly was drunk, because he was looking back that whole way.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was a terrible call. Both of those, all three of those missed calls kept the drive alive for the Dolphins. And then the final drive where they didn't call pass interference when Chase Claypool was molested, just boggled my mind. The guy literally wrapped his arm around him and pulled him from the waist. And they didn't call that pass interference, and just mind-boggling to me.
And you know what? I'm a let them play type of guy, but if you're not going to let them play on so many other occasions, then calling that is just, it's completely, not calling that is completely backwards.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. If you are going to let that be, then you had no business calling the other one. It's just mind-boggling to me. And then the icing on the cake was Equanimeous St. Brown dropping a ball that went right in his hands.
That was,
do the Bears win if he catches that? Who knows? But they live to take another bite at the apple.
Yeah, I mean, the Chase Claypool was a lot more significant because you would have been much further downfield than the Equanimeous St. Brown. But like you said, you would have kept the drive going.
I mean, I think you're in field goal range with that, the Chase Claypool pass interference. I think you're in field goal range.
Yeah, most likely. I mean, we do have to remember that it was very windy, but you are probably right. Yes.
And it is very windy, but Cairo Santos also kicks in that field, you know,
and he's very good at what he does.
He's very good at what he does. And that is the real home field advantage is kicking in there. I mean, like did Robbie Gold have a strong leg? Not particularly, but he knew how to kick in that Soldier Field wind.
Yeah, he did.
And Cairo Santos really come along with that, and Cody Parkey could never figure it out.
And you know what? Here's the thing is, if you look at a scenario about a game tying field goal, there's at least that comfort of saying, okay, you get to overtime, you don't know who wins the coin toss, because there's a strong possibility that the Dolphins would have won the coin toss and they would have marched down the field and won. So you don't really know. But with that Claypool play, you are at least in field goal range, but you would have had a front row seat, so to speak, to win the game, because they needed a touchdown to win the game. Field goal would have just tied it. Touchdown wins it. Yeah, so I mean, that's where the frustration comes in.
I mean, where would that put them? Like the 20 some yard, like the 20 some yard line?
Yeah, somewhere around there. And I mean,
with all three timeouts. So you had plenty of time to try to score that touchdown too.
Yeah, exactly. I think that there was a lot brewing on that drive. You saw some good things. You saw Justin Fields continue to run. I mean, who knows? We remember what happened in the Washington Commanders game, but I think that Luke Getsy would have coached that game a little differently in that situation. I think they would have used his legs more than they tried in that Washington game when they got in the red zone. But it's frustrating that another moment from Justin Fields was taken away from him, whether it's failure to catch a ball or a missed call or a bad call. You just hope that one day that this fortune reverses, because there's nothing that Justin Fields did today to lose them that game.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's the reason they almost won that game. It truly is, first and foremost, Justin Fields. What he did with his legs, some of the throws he made. And I think we have to give this man credit too today. And maybe he's coming into his own as well in this offense, but really good shit from Cole Kmet today. That made a big difference.
Yeah, Cole Kmet, they're starting to figure out how to use him in this offense. And if you start having Justin Fields trust him, you're going to start seeing good things. Luke Getsy, I think, you know, we talked about when Luke Getsy came here, does he know offense? Yes. But it's a first-time play caller, and there's always growing pains with a first-time play caller. And I think he's working through a lot of those issues. And I still think he has a lot of hiccups in the way he calls plays. We saw some of those. We're like, why is he calling that play in this situation? But he's also doing a lot of good things. So I think you're seeing the evolution of him as a play caller and the evolution of this offensive scheme. And in addition to that, I think this offensive scheme itself, unlike Matt Nagy, who the system was the system and you're going to shoehorn the players into it, I think you're going to see this offensive scheme adapt to the players that they have. And I think Luke Getsy is still trying to figure out exactly who the players are in this and adapt them around it. So we're seeing a lot of adaptation. Look how this offense looks, not just the efficiency of it, but the type of play calls that we're seeing. They look a lot different today than they did in week 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah. And, you know, it was kind of frustrating early on, really, like, is Luke Getsy, you know, what he's doing? And you're seeing him just get better and better with what he's doing. It's making a difference. He's letting Justin Fields play football. And you're right. It's the opposite of Matt Nagy. Instead of saying, hey, you bunch of round pegs, we're going to fit you into this square hole, he's like, all right, let's readjust some things. Let's try this. Let's work it to this. And, you know, you're seeing the difference. I mean, look at the points that they've been putting up the past few weeks and look how they're able to do it. It doesn't look so helpless like it once did. You know, it makes you feel better going forward. And if Luke Getsy is going to continue to build on this, then you feel a lot better about him than you did at the beginning of the season. And, you know, to your point and many people's points, this is his first gig as an offensive coordinator. So there's going to be some learning curves. It is going to require patience. We didn't want to exercise patience early, but I think we're learning that exercising patience does pay off when things are done right. So yeah, I liked the way they were able to move the ball today. And, you know, you can nitpick. There's always some play calls that I don't understand, but you know what? It's never going to be perfect. And there are times where the play call doesn't make sense, but if one missed tackle happened or one misplay on the other end or one slip, then you can make what would be a questionable play call look good.
And not
but
even
the fact that you're getting the results tells you a lot.
And not even sometimes the play call. Play call might have been the right play call, but the wrong personnel in that play.
Right.
So, I mean, there was a couple of ones where it was ended up being Equanimeous St. Brown going on a deep pattern against Xavier Howard. You're like, that's not the matchup you want. Like,
no,
that was the right route. But if it was going to be Xavier Howard, their best cornerback on him, you want that to be Darnell Mooney or Chase Claypool. So like, you don't want that to be Equanimeous St. Brown. There was another one where there was a deep pass and you're like, okay, he's got this. And it was Cole Kmet. And that was not the route Cole Kmet should have been running. And it ended up being an overthrow. If that was one of your wide receivers, it ends up, you probably have a big play there. So there's still some growing pains there, but look, we've seen them score like 30 points multiple games in a row here. So I'm not going to shit on the offense. Defense, on the other hand, yeah, there's a lot to unpack there.
You know what I said on Twitter is this is something we just kind of have to get used to, because this is the reality of what this defense is going to be the rest of the year.
Absolutely. And we're going to see this defense get better next year, obviously, because we know this defensive system works. We've seen the Flus coach great defenses, but he needs horses. And part of it is you got to get a pass rusher in there. It doesn't have to be an elite pass rusher. It just, you have to get pass rush from your front four. His defense relies on pressure from the front four. And we know that from when Lovey ran the system too, is when we had pressure from the front four, Tommy Harris and Adewale Ogunleye. And, you know, we saw good results. So just need to get the horses on there because I think the defensive backs are okay. I think we need to get better depth, but
absolutely.
Eddie Jackson's been playing great. Jonquan Brisker's been playing great. We're seeing a lot of growth from Kyler Gordon. I think every week you're seeing him grow more and more. And I think Jalen Johnson is good. Did he have a rough game today? Anybody's going to have a rough game against Tyreek Hill.
That's not an easy assignment.
The one where there was a borderline illegal pick, wide receiver pick, and Tyreek Hill blew by him. Like, what did you expect him to do? Like, he got put where there was in a pick already, and he had Tyreek Hill running on the full sprint, and he had to catch up to him. Like, that's not going to happen. All you can do in that position is hope for a bad throw. Because Tyreek Hill, there's not a lot of cornerbacks that can cover him one-on-one.
Yeah, it's a tough assignment. I think, too, the other thing about looking at the Bears' defense is you think about what they had to start the season, what they have now, and even if Robert Quinn wasn't putting up the numbers, any pressure on the quarterback can make a difference, even if you're not getting home. Today, they didn't have any pressure on Tua for most of the game. So that makes a big difference. And I think that we're probably going to record the fewest sacks in the NFL for the rest of the year.
I wouldn't be surprised. I think Robert Quinn is probably a bigger loss to this team in the short run than Roquan Smith. Because Robert Quinn, he was not putting up the sack numbers. But if you looked at Pro Football Focus advanced metrics, he had quite a few quarterback pressures. And it makes the other side a lot easier to get pressure if you've got somebody getting pressure on the one side. I think, honestly, losing Robert Quinn probably is going to hurt this team in the short run more. But the fact that you're able to get his salary off the books and you pick up a fourth rounder for him, it's something you needed to do. It wasn't going to be so much of a help that it made the light years of difference, but I'm just being honest. I don't think an off-ball linebacker is the difference between this defense being respectable and being, you know, bad.
Exactly.
And this defense has been much, much, much better in the second half. I think there's a lot of work in progress. I'll be curious to see how things look, going forward against the Lions. Do we see some improvement because the Lions have really struggled offensively the last few weeks? Do we see them regain some form?
Yeah, it'll be interesting because the Lions, we've seen them put 40 plus points up this season. Will it be different at Soldier Field versus Ford Field? I don't know. I could kind of see it going either way. I could see the Bears defense playing slightly better, but I could also see them bowling over the Bears defense with a lot of runs and a lot of, quick plays to try to just dink and dunk downfield.
I don't know. We'll see.
The main goal, though, obviously this goes for any game, is it would be really good to really put up some yards and points on the Lions offensively.
Yeah, that's my just hope, period. We saw a slight shift in the defense because Roquan Smith had been playing that Will linebacker's position, and Nicholas Morrow was playing the mic, and they moved Nicholas Morrow over to the Will spot, and they moved undrafted rookie Jack Sanborn into the mic role. And, you know, I know Bears Twitter has, they've got the Jack Sanborn fever. And I think Jack Sanborn is a very smart guy, and I don't think you're going to catch him out of position of where he's supposed to be. He's just not that fast, that athletic, that he, where he needs to be. He's not going to be a starter very long, I don't believe.
No, he might be, you know, he might help get by a few times a bit this year and maybe a future depth piece, but yeah, I would agree. Not a number one.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think at best he grows into a Nick Kwiatkowski type guy, where Nick Kwiatkowski got paid.
That's a name we haven't talked about in a while.
Yeah, Nick Kwiatkowski got himself paid, and he played okay, but he wasn't an elite linebacker. But maybe Jack Sanborn can grow into that. I just don't think I think he's just very technically sound, and we saw him make a couple plays, but there was one time, I don't even remember this, Jack Sanborn wound up covering Tyreek Hill. Mm-hmm. And I use the term cover as loosely as you can use that term.
He was assigned to him.
It was a zone coverage, and Tyreek Hill was in that zone, and he watched Tyreek Hill just run past him like he was in park.
Yeah. This again, not an easy assignment, but you know that kind of speed isn't going to be able to catch that.
You know, but the good things about the Bears this week, you know, they had the special teams gaffe, the defense really struggled. At the very end, you saw them make some plays, and I think what you're going to have to see them do defensively is they're going to have to at some point either blitz or sell out on the run. And I know Alan Williams and Matt Eberflus don't want to do that, but at the end you saw Jaquan Brisker do it was a run blitz, and he didn't make the play, but he forced the play in, and it went for no yards, and that kind of set up that one stop at the end of the game. And I think the Bears are going to have to do that more. They're going to have to create coverage or create pressure from blitzes and be creative in stopping the run with some run blitzes. I think those are the things they're going to have to do to curb some of these offenses from making these drives. Maybe you can get away with it against the Lions. I know the Lions have put up some points, but I think the league has figured them out a little bit. But you're not going to do it against this Dolphins offense. You're not going to do it against that Eagles offense. I think you have to.
Probably not against the Bills either.
Yeah, you have to, I think, at some point, roll the dice and take risks. Because what's the difference if they're going to drive down and score a touchdown anyway? Is give yourself a chance. Try to be more aggressive with your defensive backs and undercut routes. You know, we got to get back to turning the ball over. Even if that team is driving, if you can punch a ball out, even if they drive from, if they start at their own 20 and they drive all the way down to the other red zone, if you cause a turnover, they didn't score. And that's what matters. So I think creating turnovers, selling out to stop the run, or blitzing to get a little pressure, rolling the dice, taking risks is the only way this team is really going to have a chance on defense for the rest of the year.
Yeah, pretty much. but if they're scoring 30 plus points, it's whatever to me, right?
It's true. Like I said, I normally, the Bears defense allowing 35 points, so I guess they didn't quite give up 35. Seven of those were special teams gaffe, but giving up that many points and having the ref steal the game, I probably would have been a raving lunatic. And I was perfectly fine because I saw all the things that I needed to see. I checked off all the boxes, and number one on that list is JF1 looked ridiculous. I'm dying to see what kind of fantasy numbers that man put up, because he had three passing touchdowns, one rushing touchdown, and 178 yards rushing.
Yeah, he balled out today. Tua had some nice things to say after the game about him, called him a baller. Like I said earlier, a lot of media people were positively talking about Justin Fields. And one play in particular that I loved from Fields was that throw he made to Darnell Mooney in the end zone for a touchdown. I mean, that was as beautiful of a throw as you can make.
Absolutely. There's two more things I wanted to talk about. They're kind of backtracking here. After the Bears made the trades for mostly Roquan Smith, but Robert Quinn as well. Apparently there was a lot of negative chatter in the Bears locker room, and Ryan Poles went down and addressed all the players and talked about the situation and where they were and why they made the moves they made, and reassured people, and they reassigned permanent captains. And I think that was the right way to go about things, is listening to Eddie Jackson just talk about the emotions from being upset to being ready to go. And it clearly showed on the field that he was ready to play today, because he played his ass off today.
Yes, he did. I think that the transparency from Ryan Poles, the honesty of the players, I think is a good thing. And I don't blame them for being emotional. I mean, those are two captains that were traded away. Robert Quinn, especially, really well respected. And I can understand why people would be upset. But I think when you have a GM like Ryan Poles to explain things the way he does and be transparent with everybody, I think that they'll see the end game here. I really do. And listen, in every game they played the past few weeks, whether they've traded away guys or not, you know, they haven't quit. Look at last week against Dallas. They fought hard. They eventually got bowled over because Dallas is just a hell lot better than you, but they didn't phone it in. Look at today. Last year's Bears team probably loses that game 49-10. But even when they were down 21-10, when they made that bad gaffe, they got right back to it and they scored and they battled until the very end. So there's clearly, in my opinion, there's clearly good mojo going with the team. And this is that dream scenario, whether it's the offense or the defense. When things are coming up short, it's not a systematic problem that we've been seeing the past few weeks. It hasn't been a motivation or attitude problem. It's just flat been talent.
Yep. And I said it early on that if we lose because of the other team has more talent, okay, we know that this team doesn't have talent,
right?
Like, they're talent deficient, and we're addressing all of those things. It just, you can't, Rome wasn't built in a day. And the first part of this rebuild was tear it down to the studs, get in the best financial place you can be, and build up as much draft capital as you can. And that's what they did. They've got $125 million to spend. Like, they've got ridiculous amounts of money. And now they have, I think they have a first rounder, a second rounder, a third rounder, two fourth rounders, two fifth rounders, and a seventh rounder, I believe, is what they have.
Mm-hmm.
So now they've got, last year, would they have going into the draft or right before the draft, I think they had like two picks in the top 100. And now they've got one, two, three or four. So you're already putting yourself in a much better position. Now it's to build up the talent. And again, it's not going to all be in one shot, but look how bad the Dolphins were last year. And you add a couple pieces and suddenly now they are a real contender.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the Bengals. They went from a terrible team to an elite team. And that's my rationale for adding Jordan Addison, is because it seems like right now, if you add yourself an elite wide receiver, then, you know, scoring points is what drives these teams. You can pay for a defense. But we shall see.
Yep, for sure.
And then the last point I wanted to make about the Bears was Alan Williams said that he was asked about losing Roquan Smith, and he said that they were going to go plan to be better without him. And I know some of the Chicago media, especially David Haw, were very critical of that. What did they expect him to say? Oh, we're going to be terrible. We're going to go out there and suck. You know, we're not even going to bother playing a defense. No, you go out there and you want the guys that you're going to battle with to play their best. So you go out there and you publicly back them. Hey, listen, we lost a good player, but you know what? We're going to go out there and we're going to try to be better without him. That's our goal.
Well, like, yeah, exactly. Like you said, what do you want them to say? We're going to stink now.
Yeah. Like I'm going to be, have confidence, believe in your guys.
Isn't that what we've wanted to see from Bears management? Confidence in their own projects?
Yep. So put your money where your mouth is. Like, you know, that's when he says it, I believe that they're going to try to do a lot of things. And you know, you definitely got less talented by losing Quinn and Smith, but you know what? Doesn't mean overall you're going to be any worse or any better. You just got to go out there and still compete every day or every game.
Yep, exactly.
What do you want to move on to next?
Should we do some baseball? There's obviously some news in the city, and the season just ended, and now we go into the off season.
Yeah. My wife is a big Phillies fan, so we put the projector up and we're watching the World Series on the big screen on the projector. Wasn't the outcome she was hoping for, but this is where the smart money was on the Astros. But you know, Dusty Baker got his World Series. That's the one, I guess, shining thing of it. You know, the other news is apparently the Astros had a deal in place to get Wilson Contreras.
And the owner never approved it.
Yeah. I don't know if I was happy with that compensation.
Yeah. I mean, it didn't seem like the greatest, but if he ends up walking this offseason, he's not coming back, it would have been better to get something rather than nothing.
I mean, we'll get the comp pick.
Yeah, but wouldn't you rather have an asset to work with in the short term?
I mean, I don't know. I think the Cubs pitching is going to be a little bit crowded. I mean, we're going to go after a front end guy. I think we've got a lot of mid and back end type guys. So what was the projection?
Where was the projection?
I mean, what were they projecting him to be on for the Cubs next year?
For Contreras?
Yeah, I mean, because unless I'm crazy, they were going to trade him for one of the back end starting pitchers for the Astros, right?
That was one of the guys I read about. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, where does he fit in the rotation for the Cubs next year? That guy.
Oh, I see, the guy they were trading for. Okay.
Yeah. So I mean,
sorry, I misunderstood.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the way I look at it is they're probably going to go after a frontline starter. And I think the numbers game, you're going to have a guy that's probably a starter kind of quality that might have to be a rotation or a depth piece or a sixth starter. You know, just because of the numbers game. So I don't know.
I just like them to re-sign him, but if you don't, I'll say this. If the Cubs are able to build a good enough lineup next year and you kind of go the route of the Astros where you're like, all right, we have two really good catchers who are good at catching, pitch framing, and calling good pitch counts or pitch plays, if you will, with the pitcher, you know, calling the right pitches, location, whatnot, because that, you know, that is part of the game, is catchers working with the pitchers to know where to put the ball, what types of pitches to throw. And look, the Astros are like, all right, our catchers can't really hit, but you know what? We'll make sure all the other eight guys can. Our catcher will be our ninth hitter, but our catcher will contribute to the pitching. And that's going to be good enough to win. And the Astros have done nothing but win. So, you know, a Christian Vasquez, someone like that, maybe you go that type of route where you're like, you know what, if we're not going to bring Contreras back, let's darn well make sure that all the catchers on the squad are at the very least good defensive guys, call the right plays and do all that. I know it sounds like football, but I'm still in that football mindset, but you know what I mean? Because when David Ross was here, he was really good at that. He was good at defending. He worked well with John Lester. He came here because of John Lester. And what did we see from John Lester? Elite level pitching. David Ross was a big part of that. Could be going that route. Maybe they built up this pitching with that mentality saying, all right, we're going to win a lot with our pitching. We're going to beat you with our arms. So we're going to get the best arms. We're going to grow some good arms. And we're going to make sure our catchers are going to optimize our pitcher's performance. Because Wilson Contreras is a great hitter, and he's got a great arm to throw out base runners. But he is not the best defensive catcher, nor is he the best framer. And we've seen the kind of difference between him and a guy like Yan Gomes. Yan Gomes isn't going to hit like Wilson Contreras, but we saw how successful this staff was able to pitch with Yan Gomes behind the plate.
You know, with that, the other day I was in a work meeting and I was kind of looking at the free agents, and I made my very early, lineup for next year with free agents, assuming the Cubs are going to really pony up and pay. First base / DH, Jose Abreu.
See, so you're confident that he would come to the Cubs and not go back to the Sox? I mean, I know we've heard the rumors that he's not going to go back to the Sox, but I don't know.
I think he would totally go back to the White Sox. I have heard that the White Sox are no longer interested.
I've heard that too, and I kind of get why, if Andrew Vaughn is going to be the future of that position, but yeah, it'll be interesting to see.
If it's the Cubs versus another team. I mean, he can stay in the home he lives in and stay in the city where he's been. I think that's a comfort level. If all things are equal.
Mm-hmm.
So I have the Cubs signing Jose Abreu, Nico Horner playing second, Patrick Wisdom continuing playing third, Xander Bogaerts playing short as a free agent.
I like the sound of that.
Gary Sanchez coming over as a free agent catcher. Ian Happ playing left. Suzuki playing right. Velasquez playing center field. And Franmil Reyes as your DH. And your rotation, your five starting pitchers. Kodai Senga, I think the Cubs, that's the guy the Cubs pull the trigger on. Marcus Stroman is your number two. Justin Steele, your number three. Hayden Wisniewski, your number four. Kyle Hendricks, your number five. And I also think they make a play for Taiwan Walker to bring him over. And all in all, that puts the Cubs at around a $200 million payroll. I assumed Jose Abreu would be about $9 million a year. Xander Bogaerts around $31 a year. Gary Sanchez about $6 Senga, I put it 17-ish. And Taiwan Walker around 12 or 13. So it puts the Cubs around a little over $200 million payroll, which is probably well within what they're able to afford.
All right. I'll tell you, the shortstop, that needs to be a big splash. That needs to be a Xander Bogaerts or a Trey Turner or a Carlos Correa. I think it needs to be one of those three guys. They can't shorten out on that. That is where you go big.
Yep.
Bring that bat that can hit for power, average, on base, can give it all because they need more production.
You know, I looked, how do you upgrade third base?
That Xander Bogaerts.
I mean, I guess you could move him. I mean, what if they went a big splash and they signed Bogaerts and Correa?
Don't get any thoughts right now. Sean's head's going to explode.
What I'm just saying is, I'm like, do you want to upgrade over Patrick Wisdom? Absolutely. But like, he's a perfectly fine defensive third baseman. But he's got big power in that bat.
If you're going to keep Patrick Wisdom around, I would rather rely on him being a guy you could use in certain situations, not playing 150 games.
I agree with you, but let me bring up.
Because, you know, I'll give him credit for this. He's got the holes in his swing, but the fact that he was a late bloomer who we thought was just kind of Brian Lehera's way out of the league. He had 25 home runs last year. For a guy who has that many holes in a swing, for a late bloomer like he was, to still hit 25 home runs in a season in that situation, it really not bad. There's value in something there.
Here are the free agent third basemen. 38-year-old Justin Turner. 37-year-old Evan Longoria, Joe Wendell, 37-year-old Matt Carpenter, Jace Peterson, Charlie Culbertson, Matt Duffy, Johan Camargo, Marwin Gonzalez, Brandon Drury, Chesler Cuthbert, DJ Burt, and Rob Segadine.
Hey, you're missing one more name. Aramis Ramirez.
Might as well.
See, that's why I like the idea of Xander Bogaerts. He could play short and third. And Xander Bogaerts is a damn good player.
Yeah, absolutely. but so then what do you have Nico Horner then play short and then Bodie play second or
Nick Madrigal
play second?
Kind of what I'd think. I actually wrote for Cubby's Crib about what they would do with Madrigal in a number of scenarios. I think Xander Bogaerts would help him keep his job because Correa's never played third before. Trey Turner's never played before.
He has. Both of them have. Very little. I was looking at number of games that they had played, and they had... I found a site, and it was saying, like, in their career, they had a handful of games each. But I don't think you switch them over. But I think Xander Bogaerts...
You said Carlos Correa?
Yeah.
Let me, because I'm looking at, let's see, standard fielding. Because according to baseball reference, he's played zero games at third.
Let's see.
Maybe in the minors, maybe in college or amateur.
Yeah, I found a site that had these advanced fielding metrics, and it said that they had all of them had played some.
Was it Fangraphs?
No, I'm trying to find it.
Because when I looked at Baseball Reference, it showed that they did not, unless that's just counting starting games, but I would feel like they'd have metrics for every single position, considering that they list all splits and positions there. I mean, either way, it's going to be a scenario where the most...
Let's see. Oh, you know what? I was reading it wrong. It was Baseball Savant. So it said 3B on there and had number of attempts. But I think they were talking about his range going towards third base.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. They get really advanced into that stuff. He hasn't formally played that position.
Yeah. But that Baseball Savant site goes real in depth.
It does. I mean, you get a lot of the stats in terms of like the physics, like RPMs, the rotation, the movement, vertical drop, horizontal drop of a pitch. They really go in depth. Oh, and by the way, Carlos Correa, his career defensive runs saved at shortstop, 70.
Yeah, he's real good. But part of the reason I picked Gary Sanchez as that other catcher or the catcher spot is the defensive metrics versus some of the other free agent catchers and affordability as well. But I don't think the Cubs solve all their problems this off season, but I'm not in love with Franmil Reyes being their DH. But I think Xander Bogaerts does give them the flexibility to do some other things. The DH could be opportunity for the hot hand to get at bats. Not have a set DH. You could put Xander Bogaerts at third, Horner at short, and Madrigal or Bodie at second. Wisdom can play third sometimes. You have a little bit of flexibility in there.
And right. No, I agree.
And I don't hate having Patrick Wisdom on this team because you need more power in this lineup. And this season, he was your best power hitter.
He was the best power hitter in Chicago baseball. He had more home runs than anybody.
Yeah, he was the best. Yeah. So it's tough to just like cast him off like he's a leper. But, you need to improve. And I think Abreu, the big bopper that he was earlier on. I mean, I don't know if he's ever a big bopper, but I think he's lost some of his power, but he's still a good hitter.
Very good hitter. Yeah.
Wisdom still gives you power. Bogart's got some power. Hap's got some power. You know, you're still not going to be, you're not going to be clobbering home runs like the Astros or Yankees, but it does make you a much more formidable lineup.
Oh, absolutely.
Other side of town, the White Sox have a manager.
Yep, they do. They were finally the last team to hire one, but they got Pedro Grifol, who was, 9 years with the Kansas City Royals. He'd been there a while, and now he's going to be the next White Sox manager.
Yeah, and when they announced that, I immediately Googled who he was.
Yeah, I didn't know anything about him. I really didn't know who he was. I just knew that he had been with Kansas City for a number of years. But you hear what colleagues have said. They've raved about him. They've talked a lot about his character, his personality. He seems like a guy with a lot of energy. He seems like a guy that's really passionate about what he does. And he's said all the right things so far. Play good fundamental baseball, hit home runs. It's everything that you want to hear. So, I mean, you know, so far looks a hell of a lot like the opposite of Tony La Russa, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's not a young guy, but he's not old by any stretch. He's 53, which is a long cry from a 200-year-old Tony La Russa. I don't like the fact that Ozzie Guillen was a finalist for this position.
Because what? It was between him, Grifol, and I think the hitting coach from Philly.
Which after the World Series, you had questions about that then. But I mean, we'll see how it goes. The one nice thing is he has a bench coach. He has scouted the White Sox for a long time. So he probably knows them as mm-hmm. well as anybody that they could have hired outside the organization. He also knows the division.
Mm-hmm.
Really well. Those are all pluses. You know, now the question is, can he get this team to be a cohesive unit?
Yeah, I mean, I think he has the personality to connect with these guys really well. I really like his personality so far. I think the vision is there. You know, again, it's all about how is he going to execute. Is the roster going to be good enough to help execute? You know, all these things come into play. So, you know, this is a situation where we don't have much to base off of because this is his first manager gig. And, you know, we don't really know a lot about him.
Right.
But I think that he's a likable guy for this team. I think fans are getting a breath of fresh air, considering who their last manager was. And I don't think that you're going to see the same philosophy of trying to take days off, so to speak, like we saw under Tony La Russa, or not hustle on every play. I don't think we're going to see that with Pedro Grifol. How is he going to do technically behind the bench? We have no idea. We have no idea, but there are big things that have to be worked out. And I think establishing a good culture is very, very important. And, you know, I do feel confident that he can at least do that, but the rest, you know, we'll see.
Yeah. And, they're going to have Tim Anderson back because in the biggest duh ever, the White Sox picked up that option.
Yeah. Shocking, right?
Yeah, $12.5 million option for Tim Anderson. Whew. Probably a real brain buster there.
I was floored. Floored, I tell you.
Now, the question is, do the White Sox also attempt to go after one of the stud shortstops and then move Tim Anderson to second?
Possible. It's going to be interesting to see what they do this offseason. How much are they going to spend? Who are they going to trade? Are they going to offer a guy like Liam Hendricks to the Dodgers? Are they going to maybe look to move another one of their position pieces? Are they going to spend some money?
I mean,
a lot of questions to ask.
I mean, that signing one of the big shortstops and then moving Tim Anderson to second solves a lot of your infield questions, because just like this year, you have a question going into second base.
Right. And I don't think you want to solve it with another aging veteran again.
No. I mean, your other option here is probably Gene Segura, who was your option last year. Not the option you want. I mean, Tim Anderson there is defensively fine, and you know what he's going to give you at the plate. It's, do the White Sox want to pony up another $30 million for Carlos Correa? I mean, maybe they go, you could even go like a cheaper route with like a Dansby Swanson. Not going to give you the same power, but he's been, over the last couple of seasons, been a hell of a baseball player.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what do we want to talk about next?
I guess hockey. I mean, the Blackhawks are still more entertaining than I thought they would be. We are starting to see some of the coming down to earth, but even so, they had one really bad game in Winnipeg, but you won an overtime game against the Kings the other night. In a game you didn't particularly play great, but you were able to get a win there. So Taze is still producing this year. He's been off to a really good start. Didn't really expect that.
Yeah. You know, he's come back from that year-long absence, and he's playing pretty well. It's, I don't know if he refound the excitement to go along with his new body or what, but it's nice to see.
It is. I think that there's going to be more questions about whether he gets dealt or not, if there's good value there. I know it's very risky. I'm not sure he's going to get traded yet or not, but it does make you think. It's like, all right, if he's playing well, can you get something for him? Are teams willing to pay up something for him? And something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, the goalie situation is becoming a little difficult.
Yeah. Well, hopefully Peter Mrazek will be back soon.
You know, you found yourself for the third time this season almost having to use an emergency goaltender. So on Saturday, Söderblom was ruled out in the second period. They had to turn to the fifth string goalie, Dylan Wells. So we'll keep an eye on that, but the goalie situation is a little more rough than I think we were hoping for.
Yeah, but I'll give some of these goalies some credit. They've played better than I've expected them to. Did Söderblom get his first career NHL win the other night?
Yeah,
I think that was Söderblom and net in the overtime game against the Kings.
Yeah, I wonder if Soderblom is going to end up being the goalie of the future.
I don't know. Maybe a backup or one of them, but I don't know. We'll see. I don't want to rule anything out, but
we'll see. He's 23. And he's played well in his time here. He played well in Rockford. I don't know. We shall see. It's a goalie's a fickle beast.
It is. It really is. And we've seen the Hawks, you know, bring up guys that succeed kind of out of nowhere. I mean, Corey Crawford kind of seemed like an AHL career AHL guy for a number of years. And then he became a legitimately good goaltender that helped win multiple Stanley Cups. And then we saw it didn't last, but we got good seasons out of Kevin Lankinen. So we'll see. We'll see. Remember Antti Niemi in 2010? They found him. He wasn't a prospect or anything in the Hawks system, but they were able to find him and make it work with him.
Yeah, absolutely. But you know, it's funny. We beat up Davidson with the roster he put together, and we all were like, oh, this is a tank job. This is tanking. And they're clearly not tanking. They might not be good. This might be a legit, hey, we're rebuilding, but we legitimately are trying to put together a winning team here. This is not a tank job.
Well, you know, I think that there might have been intention by the front office to tank a bit, but the coaches and the players certainly aren't seeing it that way. And they're playing hard enough to where so far, you know, they're not the worst of the worst. But I still do think that in due time, reality is going to set in a bit. But I do think that no matter what, the way Luke Richardson has coached this team, that they are going to fight hard, even if they're not going to win a lot down the stretch.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the proper word for them would be competent. Players are playing hard. They're playing within the scheme. The scheme seems to fit. And people know what their roles are, and they're doing what they're supposed to do. They're clearly talent deficient, but you're seeing them be competitive and play competent and being well coached. And it's going a long way. It's going a real long way.
Yeah, it is.
But what's going to be sad? I mean, honestly, is what's worst case scenario for the Blackhawks this year?
They don't get a lottery pick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think don't make the playoffs and don't get one of the high odd lottery picks. I think that's terrible. I mean, if they make the playoffs, at least you can hang your hat on that, is to sell to the fans. Look what we did with this talent deficient roster. Just imagine when we get some players on here. But when, you know, if you don't make the playoffs and you're just outside the lottery, I mean, just outside the playoffs, and one of those lottery picks where you get like a 1% chance or a 0.5% chance, I think that really would be a sucky position, because you're not in any realistic spot to get one of those top couple guys. And you didn't make the playoffs either. I think you either need to really shit the bed by the end of the season and get a legitimate shot to get one of the top three overall picks, or you've got to fight hard to make the playoffs. And I don't think that's realistic.
No, it's not. It's just, it's not.
So, I mean, you know, we keep an eye on it, but yeah, there are some bad teams in NHL this year.
Yeah. Look how bad the Blues have been.
The Blues are bad. Columbus is bad. San Jose is bad.
Anaheim
is bad. Anaheim is bad. Vancouver is bad. Arizona is perpetually bad.
And playing in a college hockey rink.
That would be the worst case scenario for the NHL if Arizona gets Connor Bedard, because they're gonna, how are you gonna have him play in a 5,000 seat arena in the NHL?
Yeah, but Bettman doesn't seem to care.
They'll put the fix in on that one. They're like, we'll fix it for anybody but Arizona to win the lottery.
Yeah.
Should we wrap this up with a little Bulls?
Sure.
I mean, you know, we get this Bulls team is a little frustrating. They just don't finish. We saw today that they just have so many mental gaffes when it comes down to crunch time. I mean, this was a 2-point game with 5 minutes left, and Toronto just toyed with them at the end.
That was just, they couldn't get a rebound. That's where the size issues come in, where teams are bigger, more athletic than you. You didn't shoot well down the stretch, and you made some careless plays.
Yep.
It's just, they, you know, you beat Boston once in your building. That was a good win. You beat Miami on the road opening night. That was a good win. You took care of business against the Pacers. You know, that was fine. But man, a lot of frustrating losses in here. And it's just one of those things where you look at and say, yeah, it's where the Bulls just don't have enough compared to other teams.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they beat a bad Nets team. But that was way closer than it should have been.
Yeah. I mean, it was,
I mean, you had to pull away in the fourth quarter of that game. You know, you beat a Hornets team that's not that good. You beat them fairly soundly, but then you lost again when you played the Celtics again. And you lose to the Raptors. You lose to the 76ers, which was a tough break. There's no consistency here. And, you know, you have Zach LaVine in the lineup, out of the lineup. And I get that they're trying to be abundantly cautious with him and his knee, but at some point, don't you have to play him consistently?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know why it's not happening.
I don't understand either. Is either you trust his knee or you don't trust his knee. This team,
how can you build chemistry if it's on and off all the time?
Yeah. When he's in the lineup, out of the lineup, you either get used to playing without him or you get used to playing with him. It's tough to do night in, night out. You know, we're already sans Lonzo Ball. It's just a tough road to navigate here.
Especially if you don't know if he's going to be 100% when he does play. You're on and off, you're on and off, you're on and off. I mean, when was Zach LaVine at his best last year when he was in that groove? I mean, when he's on, his shot is beautiful, but it's harder to find that groove if you're A, not completely healthy, or B, not playing every night. Either it's like either he's healthy or he's not. If he's healthy, play him. If he's not, then rest him and get him right so he can be healthy. This on and off stuff, it's on off with him. It's on off with the team. And where are we? We don't have a winning record. We're not the worst team, but it's kind of like kind of 2020 White Sox-ish. Getting a lot of vibes, similar vibes.
And you talked about the rebounding issue, and they're without Andre Drummond, who is no timetable for return. Joe Cowley is reporting that it could be days, it could be weeks before we see the return of Andre Drummond. And we are seeing improved play from Pat Williams, but not to the level where it can, make up for Zach LaVine not playing and Andre Drummond being out and no Lonzo Ball. It's not good enough.
Right. And it's frustrating too when you have other injuries on the team, like Drummond, one of the guys who can get rebounds and is big. That doesn't help.
Yeah. I mean, you don't have Andre Drummond, and today was couldn't get rebound day. When Alex Caruso is second on the team in rebounds for the game, that's not where you want to be.
No. It's frustrating because you knew going into this season that it was going to be a problem. And you did find someone to help that. But then it's like, well, now you have injuries on that front.
So it's tough because the Bulls, the way they were constructed, you were sort of backed into a corner. You can't let Zach LaVine just walk.
No, you can't. Because it's hard to replace that with what you have and where you are.
So it's when you give, and this is not a knock on Zach LaVine. He's an exceptional basketball player. But when you, if you don't give an absolutely elite level player, anybody but an elite player, the max contract, that sort of handicaps you what you can do elsewhere. And so that's, you give Steph Curry a max contract. Okay. Steph Curry he's like a Mount Rushmore player right now. Kevin Durant, Mount Rushmore type player. Those are the types of players that you're like, okay, these are the dudes. Zach LaVine is a very, very good player. He's an all-star level, but he is not like one of those Mount Rushmore dudes. And so you've got DeRozan that you're paying good money to, and Vucevic, which you're paying good money to. And that's a good core, but that's not a championship caliber core.
No, it's unfortunately not. I mean, at best, it's a playoff core, not a championship contending core. And it was kind of either stay competitive or go all the way back downhill and try to build from the ground up again. It was a very difficult situation. And again, if you're going to let Zach LaVine walk, how do you replace that? Or do you just plan on saying, all right, he's walking, we're going to tear things down again? I mean, that's kind of where you were. You weren't going to let him walk and just be like, all right, let's find another really good all-star caliber type score like that.
Yeah, it's a tough road to navigate. And I still believe in AK and Mark Eversley, but this is gonna take a number of years to build on to become a real contender for a title.
Yeah. You know you're not better than Milwaukee. You know you're not better than Philadelphia. You know you're not better than Boston. You know you're not better than Miami. And you're probably not better than Cleveland at this point. They've rebuilt it right over there.
Yeah, they really have. That Cleveland team is really good.
And they have a good system. A really good system that gets the most out of Lauri Markkanen. Something the Bulls couldn't do.
Yeah, so you're not going to sign. I mean, the big hope would have been being able to lure a Giannis, but that guy's got a contract for several more years. So you're going to have to do something like Cleveland did and really build that organization up. And I think a lot of it becomes the best you can do is bring in guys with talent, but then the health gods have to be on your side and the coaches have to coach them up, and you need players to play. And, you know, when you brought in Pat Williams, you were like, okay, we like the upside of this guy. And, you know, for that early of a pick, your return should have been a lot higher. Your expectations of a return should have been a lot higher.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's just a tough pill to swallow sometimes.
It is.
But is there anything else you wanted to talk about?
No, I think I've said my piece.
All right. Well, I'm starting to lose my voice here. So I think that's going to do it for this episode of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. I want to thank everybody so much for listening. Please hit subscribe however you listen to podcasts, whether it's iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, Google Play, Spotify, etc. Share this podcast with your friends. That's how we grow the show. Follow us on social media at Swirsky Sports, facebook.com/Swirsky Sports, SwirskySports.com, ShyFanPat2 for Alex on Twitter. Or alexanderjpatcreative.com for all the cool stuff that Alex does. And again, thank you guys so much for listening. And until next time, bear down.
Cubs win! What a lucky break! The good Lord wants the Cubs to win!
We thank Ditka and God for all they have provided.
Cubs win! Cubs win! Cubs win!
Oh, I don't want her, you can have her, she's a Packer fan. She can't fit in my van, and she looks like...
Remember, New Yorkers, smoking crack is not legal on the plains.
Bears, 31 to negative 7.
The Bears!
Oh, when the Bears go bearing down, I wanna...